Like soldiers, we gonna be fighting. And nothing gonna stop us now. In victory, we gonna be rising. The champions are wearing the crown. Welcome to In the Change Room, made just for you by Bright Rock. And yes, indeed, as you've heard, as you've seen over the past couple of days as well, if you are South African, if you are within the borders of South Africa, if you are elsewhere on the continent, or indeed around the globe, and you're South African, you can walk around and tell everyone that you see that you are a world champion once again for the third time. And that's exactly what we're going to be exploring on the show. And if you don't know who this is, my name is Lwazisa Qubu, a presenter, reporter, and journalist at SuperSport. New to the show, but all the same, very excited to be chatting all things rugby and Springbok rugby, to be specific. I am not alone. I'm alongside Johan, who I'm going to hand over. He's going to do the honors of introducing himself and exactly who he is and what he does. And he's just been speaking about his predictor and what he did achieve as far as predicting the Rugby World Cup results are concerned. And before we even get to that, the final, did you get that one right? That's the question.
I had the final spot on. It is actually margin I got wrong. I thought it would be a little tighter than that. And if the game went on another 10 minutes, I would have been even more wrong in terms of margin. So it's great. As for introducing myself, Johan Kutsia, rugby editor at supersport.com, and very, very happy to be here today.
Well, certainly happy to be here, happy to be with you. And again, he's a champion, as is the man who's currently sitting to my left. And Prince, some may know him, others call him Virgil. I don't know which one you prefer, but I'm sure champion is in there somewhere as well.
Yeah, I'm taking champion for today. For the next 4 years, just call me Prince the Champ. But I am a comedian, full name Virgil Prince. But for those in the industry and for fans out there, they know me as the comedian, formally and informally known as Prince.
Hi, my name is Sabela Sanatla.
I'm Paul True.
Hi, I'm Kyle Brown, and you're listening to In the Change Room.
Okay, champion. let's go straight into the final. Let's go straight into what we did see, Johan. And of course, I was watching with a couple of friends, and before the weekend of the final, the question that was thrown at me was, how well do you think the Boks are going to play, and are they certain levels or certain gears that they haven't engaged yet? And I was stumped because I guess based on what we'd seen England do against New Zealand in the semi-finals, but the final was a totally different story.
Yes, somehow I was never nervous. I was in the back of my mind, I thought the game you would have had to look at to see what we're going to do in the final was a loss against the All Blacks at Loftus last year, where we outplayed them for 75 minutes, only lost in the last couple of, but we played the New Zealanders off the park. And I knew that was the type of game plan that we always want to engage. Did they engage second and third gear in the final and not before? Definitely. They all of a sudden that just box kick and chase thing was gone. They were trying to attack them everywhere they could. So that's our standard A game plan, and it worked.
It's quite interesting you mentioned that, because in I guess watching and listening to some review shows from around the world, a lot of people didn't think that the box did have that second, third gear. And again, that's probably because they didn't watch, or they haven't been watching the box over the last year and a half. And I'm glad you mentioned that game at Loftus, because that's probably you asked the All Blacks, that's probably the one game where they felt, again, for 75 minutes, we were strongly, strongly outplayed.
Yeah, and we learned a big lesson that day. I think the lesson Rassie Rasmus learned was how to use the bench more effectively and efficiently. I feel like in that game, he withdrew a couple of key players too early on, or in two large groups. Like, he was taking them out in twos and threes, and the momentum just shifted. And you know how the All Blacks are in the last 10 minutes of the game. They do a legitimate gear change where they really go for it. For me, in the final of the Rugby World Cup, I won't even go so far as to say it was a gear change. I think we just finally ironed out the shirt, you know, because I felt like we were playing brilliant rugby before that. However, the knock-ons, the forward passes, the, you know, like the small silly mistakes, which mostly came from guys like Willy Leroux, you know, not catching the high ball. Yeah. Even against New Zealand, Henry Pollard also not catching the high ball. Small mistakes that don't belong in a final. And we literally took those mistakes out and then played the game, kicked a little bit less as well, distributed it a little bit more often. Yeah. And I think it was slight adjustments which really won us that game. Slight adjustments. Our forwards were still amazing as usual. Mm-hmm. Our backline still had the potential to be super dangerous. We just took out those silly things. I remember there was a game before that against Wales where we had a try scoring opportunity and did a forward pass.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, why did you forward pass? There was one where I think Lucanio broke free, had Mapimpi on his left hand side with the line, and then just threw it on his feet.
And then that right hand pass from Vili to, was it Nkosi? That was away on the right, or Chesney, that was away on the right hand side, and then the pass just skipped like
off. And that is what we eliminated in the final. And the moment we became clinical.
Prince, but can I ask you now?
Yes, sorry.
Where in that final did you know we were going to win?
Where did we win it is when our scrum started becoming completely dominant.
Yeah.
There was a point in the game where every single scrum was penalty worthy. Like, especially when Stephen Kitchoff came on, and on his first scrum, we hit another penalty. And you could see he was like, I knew this was going to happen. And just before the halftime, I heard one of the commentators saying, like, every front row player on the bench must be licking their lips, saying, I can't wait to get in there and show them what I've got. Because Beast was already destroying them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the youngsters, you know, Kitchoff and Vincent Koch and them were probably like, yeah, when I get in there, are we going to reinforce this?
Mm. Okay. All right. Let's continue to talk about champions and winners. Castle supporters jersey giveaway has produced 8 more winners. So last week we asked the question, what did Jeremy Gaskett say? The main reason was that England lost the 1991 Rugby World Cup final. And our winners are as follows: Kefilwe Mabelane, Lechelle Buertes, Jacques Henning, Mvume Makgalakanga. I hope I said that correctly. Chantal Buertes, Tato Lemoha, Henry Alexander, and Andile Majola. We say congratulations to all you guys. And you, if you haven't won anything yet, can too still be a winner. We're giving away another 8 jerseys in this episode. So another 4 jerseys, rather, in this episode. So do listen out for this week's competition question later on in the show. And Johan, can we actually enter? Are we allowed to enter? I'd like to win a jersey.
We're not allowed to enter. I'm sorry. No.
Can I?
Well, I mean, Prince told me about his prediction, his prediction numbers throughout the World Cup. I don't want to go up against him. let's give the guys a chance, man. Yeah.
Well, actually, I don't think I predicted too much. I think you guys touched on Ofe. You touched on the result, the Uruguay result against Fiji.
Yeah.
The Japan results. Mm-hmm. A couple of results that would have thrown a lot of people off. But again, you both got the final spot on. But let's just talk about again the significance of this win as South Africans and what it means for us. I mean, again, as young a country as we are, there's only really been one thing that has unified us more than anything else, and that's been through sport.
So what I learned from this whole thing was they lost their first match. They never gave up. It's rare where you find the person who was supposed to be the underdog rising up and winning the cup. So to me, I was sitting with my daughter when we were watching this, and I remember saying to her, what lesson are you taking from this? That it doesn't matter where you start in life. You can fail, but you can rise up and be the champion. So to me, I'm here to celebrate the lesson they taught me, that it doesn't matter what happens when you start. What matters is your mindset. Are you willing to stand up and rise up and become the champion?
We kind of got that in South Africa. Us and the coach, we know exactly that. We go through a lot of challenges in the country, and we always find a way to get through it, especially when we get together and know everybody and we start fighting for something. And we knew, Coach let us know that we all knew if we lost another game, that was it for us. And we had to fight every single game like it was a playoff, so we gave it everything we could. And I think, like I said earlier, like without the support of the people back home, you know, because the people back here know exactly what it feels like to have your back against the wall. Yeah, people might be learning from us, but everything that we did there and took there, we got it from the people here in South Africa.
12 years from our last World Cup win, 24 years from our first one.
Yeah.
The significance and the role that this win plays, is it still the same or is it even more significant now?
even more significant. John Smith said it best. You know, John Smith said, you know what? I've won a World Cup. I've lifted the World Cup trophy. But I can tell you for sure, this one tastes way sweeter.
Yeah.
I think this is the first time we went into a World Cup with a diverse sporting team, a team that really shows the demographic of the country.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a comedian, so I tell jokes a lot of the time. I know I haven't been funny so far, but I've just been so passionate about saying these things that I'm saying. One thing I've always noticed about sport is the team of any country, it normally showcases the demographic and the people of that country. And I feel like in South Africa, due to our racially divided past, I feel like as South Africans, we've kind of like told ourselves lies and we've started to believe our lies. So we've told ourselves that rugby is a white man's sport. We've told ourselves that soccer is a black man's sport. Yeah. We told ourselves that cricket is was a white man's sport. Now you see there's black players, colored players coming into the frame. This is the first time we've taken a team to the World Cup that has been truly diverse. Mm. I mean, we had white players, black players, colored players. We're still waiting for the Indian guys, but that will happen eventually. But I think as South Africans, we need to break down these walls that we've set in between. And this was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful occasion. Yeah. Siya Kolisi being the first black player to lift a World Cup trophy. Not even the first black player from South Africa, the first black player to lift a World Cup trophy. Do you know that now... I've read that England are now thinking about assigning Mario Itoje as the captain. English captain, right? Sunibel Williams has also put forward a request or a opinion in New Zealand for them to get their first Maori captain of the New Zealand team. So can you see, this has done changes not only in South Africa, this has done changes in the way the whole world views the sport, you know what I'm saying? And I'd like to see changes like that in Bafana Bafana as well. You know, I'd like to see white players in Bafana Bafana, not just the goalkeeper, other white players
But to the cricket team as well. We need him to now coach all our sports.
Yeah. And the country.
How great was he when he started out? In his very first press conference, he said, I know these are the political expectations of me, this is what I'm going to do. He went out, appointed a black captain, sure he got more than 50% representation, got that out of the way. So no politics anymore. Now I'm taking this squad and I'm making them win the World Cup.
Yeah.
That's the right way to do it. Yes. And he's won a lot of friends because of that. You're right. I want to add on to what you were saying.
Yes.
This is the first Springbok team that's won a World Cup that everybody in this country can associate with.
Yeah.
And that makes a big difference. I was at the airport last night just to feel the vibe. I took my 7-year-old lighty there. We're just going to drink some. Doing some of that atmosphere in. And if you saw the crowd then, I don't know how many of the videos you saw.
Yeah.
That was, you're not, that's not a white man's sport. And the joy wasn't only from white men. There were a lot of us there.
Yes.
But the place was packed and everybody was involved and everyone was passionate. This was a win for all of us.
Yes.
And all of us are excited and all of us are champions.
Yes.
It's a fantastic feeling as well. It has to be. I'm getting goosebumps right now. I do not want to lie. Because again, as you guys put it, like just the significance of this win. And again, I don't know if going into the World Cup, a lot of us who have been watching the Springboks over the last 2 years expected this. I mean, we went in as one of the favorites. Were we heavy favorites? Perhaps not. But again, I think for me, that just speaks to the essence of being South African in so many spheres, in so many areas of everyday life globally. South Africans are usually underdogs in a lot of what they do. And it just makes it that much sweeter to get this victory and then go on and listen in retrospect to a lot of... a lot of these review shows talk about Ireland this, Wales that, England. And I mean, the week building up to the final was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And just how ridiculous England and the media were just like,
they're like, we've got this.
It's ours to win.
Yeah.
It's ours to win. I was just like, guys, do you understand?
I love doing last week's podcast because we had an Englishman on here.
Yeah.
And he was also, we had a nice little conversation there about it. They just couldn't see anything in the South African team, and he said as much.
The third annual Bright Rock Players' Choice Awards, brought to you by Bright Rock and My Players, the South African Rugby Players Organization, will be held at the Park at Hyde Park on Tuesday the 19th of November 2019. The awards held by players for the players are the only of their kind in South Africa and sees professional rugby players from SA's 14 unions vote for their top players across 6 award categories. The awards ceremony will see professional South African rugby players honour and acknowledge their peers for playing the bounce over the past season. Limited tickets available to the public from Friday the 4th of October from Ticketpro.
Welcome back. We continue to talk all things Rugby World Cup 2019 and, of course, what transpired, I guess, at the end, the final game where South Africa were crowned world champions for a third time. What we are going to do now is play a little game where we're going to play a couple of clips for you and, I guess, ask these two gentlemen to decide if they actually believe what is being said or perhaps there's a bit of a hidden agenda behind those words. And the first one is with Coach Rassie Erasmus, so I guess former coach now, Rassie Erasmus. And he was asked, does he feel or did the Boks hold back a couple of their cards ahead of the Rugby World Cup final? And this is his answer.
We actually didn't try to hide anything. You know, the Japan game, we actually gave them 40 points. And then the New Zealand game, that they were just better on the day. And then we actually smashed Namibia and we smashed Canada. You know, which was the last game. And then we smashed Italy by 40 points. We're actually the highest scoring try scoring team at the World Cup. And then when we played Wales, Wales is the kind of team. And then we played Japan again, and we gave them again, I think, four or five tries. So we scored a lot of points again. But then we played Wales, it was a kicking game. And if you lose your patience against Wales, they beat England twice this year. They're the Six Nations champs. So that was actually the Rugby Championships winner against the Six Nations winner. So, and then in the final, you know, we actually kicked almost as much, but then Lukanya just brought the magic, and Mapimpi brought the magic, and Cheslin brought the magic, and you know, the individual players just whatever they saw, they played, and I guess that's what we wanted all the time. So it wasn't really that we were hiding anything. It was just that the players felt so comfortable and confident, and the platform was laid there, and they really just, you know, used their talent. So we didn't really hide anything.
Okay, so there it is, gentlemen. Yes or no? Do you believe what Sir Rassie Erasmus has said?
I do not believe him for one second. He held back all his aces up his sleeve and then he played them. And of course, he's going to deny doing it as any good cheat does. You don't tell people. No magician tells people tricks.
Yeah.
Now, he held up a couple of things up his sleeve. I think there were still a couple more if we were to go behind in that game. You know, he'd have pulled off even more.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't. Why just play? We're not the All Blacks. We don't have to impress people all the time. Yeah. If it's good enough to get the win and get you to the final, yeah, that's fine. I don't believe him, but I'm happy I don't believe him. No.
Yeah.
I guess that's always been the South African blueprint. Do you agree with those sentiments?
I think he was honest for the most part. However, I think in that final week he was really playing mind games with England, because in the final week he was saying things like, yeah, we're not changing anything at all, we're playing the exact same game. And let's be honest, in the final we kicked much less, we ran a bit more, our decision making was a little bit different, it was not exactly the same thing. And I think he held a little slight tweak under his shirt sleeve that they didn't know was coming. Faf kicked much less but much more accurately. Pollard's distribution was a little bit more on song. Yeah. You know, Pollard had like nice little cross-field kicks as well happening throughout the game. A couple of really nice up and unders happening throughout the game. So yeah, I think we tweaked it slightly, and the return of Cheslin Kolbe also meant that we could swing it wide a little bit more often. So when he told Eddie Jones that I was bringing the exact same thing, Eddie believed it, because he also said in the media article, he says he knows for a fact that the Springboks are coming through the front door.
Yeah.
Right? We did come through the front door, but he forgot there was a little window open in the toilet as well. And we sent a couple of guys through the window.
We certainly did send a couple of guys through that window. And I mean, I remember a couple of times, maybe once or twice as well, Makazole Mapimpi going up for the high ball and winning it. And just like,
that was nice.
Let's do this. So the gentlemen feel it's NL. They don't quite believe Rassie. I definitely agree with you. I definitely do not believe Rassie either. There was a different approach, different game plan going into that final. Second time around is going to be good old Skulperitz. We know that he's exiting the rugby scene, and a fantastic way to exit. So he posed this question to Frans Steyn and Dwayne Vermeulen, two players who are on the other side of 30 as well, within the Boks setup, and asked them in a rather humorous way if they are also going to be saying goodbye to international rugby.
I'm throwing a bread from the independence, which will make to all the men on the right hand side. Can you go another 4 years? Dwayne and Francie.
I think Skalky went to 45, so if I can go to 36, it will be achievement, so I'll try our best.
Right? I'll take it day by day.
So, Frans Steen, Dwayne Vermeulen, still got plenty to offer as far as rugby players are concerned, but within the box setup, is this it for them?
I don't know. I don't think Skalk would have asked that question if he didn't know the answer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, the same Skalk's the right guy to ask that question because he's answered it. You've got a lot of value as an older player.
Yeah.
If you can still keep the energy up, then you can mean so much to the squad. Mm. Whether they'll be starters or whether they'll just go play that role at Super Rugby franchises or wherever,
yeah.
I don't know. But I think there's still a lot of life in both of them.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, Frans Steen, just for the mere fact that, you know, back in 2007, he was like a star kid at the back, but this time he's more or less shifted into the bench. I think for him, possibly depending on who else we have out there, we can play a brilliant role at fullback or even as a utility back, like at the back in different positions. Frans Steen, maybe it's done. Dwayne Vermeulen, though, I think he's still just such a power player that I wouldn't be surprised if he sticks around for a few more seasons, unless some brilliant kid comes out of nowhere and takes his position, which happens in South Africa. Mm.
That's a fantastic point you make, because my next question was, especially with Dwayne, is there an eighth man as good as he is or slightly as good as he is within South Africa? Do we have a player, if he was to say that this is me, I'm done, do we have an already made eighth man that come the June tests next year walks into that side?
No, we don't. Not in his mold. We have Warren Whiteley, who can come back, but he's a completely different kind of player. What we do have is guys like Johan Augustus and those guys that are also big, bulky, like to take physical contact type players, but none of them are ready for test rugby yet, which makes Dwayne's continued up until the Lions series at least in 2 years' time.
Yeah.
He's got to stay involved there and make sure he gives us a new Dwayne before he goes.
Yeah.
So it's up to him. He must give us a
give us
Dwayne.
Another Dwayne.
If you want to leave, give us another Dwayne.
He's powerful.
But I mean, there are two players that we do know, or three players, I guess, we do know that are leaving for sure. Actually, no, let's go back to two, because we know that Skalpritz is ending his time as a rugby player. Francois Lowe has said goodbye to the Springboks as well. And again, a man who, for the longest time, perhaps playing within South African shores, was extremely underrated only once he left and I guess maybe got to know a bit of the other conditions up north. Did we really start to appreciate the man that he is and the player that he is and his work just in the loose, his work around the field? What have you made of his career before we talk about the Beast as well? What have you made of his career and his contribution to the Springbok cause?
Beast.
Francois Lowe.
Oh yeah, Francois Lowe. No, cool. Like we said, once again, it's another one of those situations where, you know, we make substitutions and it just gets better.
Yeah.
And Francois Lowe's been that guy. And the Wales game, that turnover that he did, or the penalty that he got, like in the last
tournament, winning turnover there.
Exactly, because Wales is probably as close as we got to exiting this tournament. Yeah. That was very close. So that was crazy good. So, yeah, no, his performance in the World Cup, brilliant.
Yeah.
Sometimes I believe, like, play your position. You know, you might not be in the starting lineup, but when it's your time, do your thing. And he's been absolutely solid. He's taken the position of Kwagga Smit, who I really like Kwagga Smit a lot.
Yeah.
But he took that role and he played brilliantly. I didn't even know he was retiring for that matter from international rugby, because he still looks so young. How old is he?
Yeah, three, four now.
Let's all remember that last year this time, Scott Brits was also officially retired.
Yeah.
So with Rashi, anything is possible.
Yeah.
If I can make a quick comment about Francois Lowe, he had the bad luck when he was in South Africa to be up against guys like Heinrich Brissot and Marcel Coetzee and those guys. So he was always a little down on the ladder. You know, the old Brissot, it was even Luke Watson. There was a whole lot of people in that. Yeah. In that era. So maybe he didn't get all the tests he should have, but you were right. He went to Bath, grew as a player, and added a lot to the Springbok team, especially in terms of leadership.
Mm. Oh. Certainly is the case for Francois Lowe, and of course we love his performances, we love his contributions. Another man that is endeared all around the globe is Tendai Mtawarira. There it is. And there are rumblings that perhaps it could be the end of his time with the Springboks as well. I mean, what, the most capped Springbok prop of all time?
Yeah.
117, 118 caps. I'm not quite sure what it is, but again, you cannot understate what he has meant, not only to Springbok rugby, but again, we go back to, I guess, that Siya Kolisi factor, where two black African rugby players and his journey to becoming the Beast, that is of absolute significance.
Yeah. No, amazing. Look, for me personally, if Beast were to retire after this World Cup, I would say goodbye with a smile and with a happy heart.
Yeah.
I feel like he's done a wonderful job over the years, and I feel like this World Cup is a perfect climax or perfect pinnacle. He could probably play a couple of more years, but if he had to decide to end it now, I would say goodbye with a smile on my face and a happy heart.
And
knowing
a standing ovation.
And a standing ovation.
I mean, after that performance as well. Where he
I want to talk about that, because the question is, where in the ladder of Springbok props throughout history, where does Beast fit in?
Mm.
And my answer is right at the top.
Yeah.
And I grew up idolising Os du Randt. And I still think Os du Randt's an amazing rugby player.
Yeah.
But the first game I saw Beast play live was in 2009 against the Lions in that first test, where he took Phil Vickery apart. We won that game because Phil Vickery afterwards said, is the quote, is, you know you had a bad game when right after the whistle your mom and your missus phones you to tell you they still love you. And then exactly 10 years after that, he does the same thing in a World Cup final. Not only the World Cup final, the two preceding games as well.
Yeah.
In fact, that scrum has dominated all year.
Yeah.
For him to have done that for so long and to have won games of that influence, that puts him right at the top. Best loose head ever to play for South Africa.
And that's quite an accolade. That is quite an accolade.
I will say I am super excited, though, about Stephen Kitshoff.
Yeah.
I'm super excited.
We are absolutely well stocked. Won't complain if Beast does call it a day. We'd still love to see him play.
Yeah.
We got Oxenstierna coming through, you know, like a lot of guys. He's the new Beast. He's now going to the Sharks as well. Yeah. So there's the pipeline's working well for us.
Listen, as a man from the east coast of this country, I'm very happy about that move. But we're going to talk about that another time. But there was so many standout players we've already touched on throughout the World Cup, the final itself, Dwayne Vermeulen and the performance he put in. But again, one standout player that for the last 2 years, even with the shift in position, has just taken flank rugby or loosey rugby to another dimension. Never thought it would be possible. He's taken it to another dimension, and for his performances, he's been rewarded as the RB, the World Rugby Player of the Year.
Yeah, well, for Peter Steph to Toy. He is amazing in that. For a guy who's actually, and I was when Heineke Meyer first shifted him to flank, I thought that was a terrible mistake. The guy's too big, he's too bulky.
100%,
But he proved us wrong, and in what way? The interesting thing is what I noted with some technical analysis done by some other guys in the week is how he managed to, his job was to mark George Ford, the fly-off, who's quite quick on his feet.
Yeah.
And he would do that for 5-6 phases in a row, that he would never leave George Ford. So they could never attack that channel. Yeah. They were never allowed, because no one wants to run into Peter Steph.
Yeah.
That apart, I mean, that's why maybe if he didn't do all the tackles he normally did, he took that 10, 12 of theirs out.
Yeah.
They didn't have anything to do.
Brilliant.
And that's how, you know, that's how you win big games. That's why he's got the biggest accolade that you could get in World Rugby. Yeah. Congrats to him. What a player. And he's still got a couple of years. So
that's the most exciting thing about it, isn't it? He's still got so much to offer. And I mean, how old is he? 25, 6, 7? He's around there, but that type of performance, for a lot of South Africans who've been watching him over the last 2 years, has been coming.
Yeah.
This accolade has been coming for Peter Steph Du Toit.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, you saw it in the All Black game where he just broke through and scored a try. But that aside, do you know who he reminds me of a lot? You guys remember Juan Smith?
Absolutely, 100%.
He reminds me of Juan Smith a lot. But yeah, just the guys who put in a high amount of work, huge stature. I mean, can you imagine playing against the Springboks and seeing, like, you know, they call us the tournament's brutes. Like, we're the brutes of the tournament. Imagine you see there's Eben Etzebeth, tall guy. There's Archias Neyman, there's Malcolm Marks, big, thick guy, there's Peter Steph Du Toit. Like, you've got to be feeling like, whoa, I'm up against something here. And Peter Steph, I think he just completes that framework of power beautifully. Hard work, power. And it's been a while now that the Springboks have had rotational loose forward, loose forwards, where the locks can be flanks, can be eighth men, can be everything. And that's why, like, when Peter Steph moved away from lock, I was also like, okay, that's a little bit surprising. But seamlessly. And I'm sure you could even play like eighth man. Like these guys, they move around perfectly. And it's an advantage we've had for a couple of years now that the All Blacks in Australia consistently point out to be like, yo, you guys, whoever you choose in that frame just works.
And congratulations to him, and you know, being voted the world's best player. And again, we just really are blessed to have.
We also have to add Rassie being the world's best coach, Springboks being the world's best team. Amazing year, Springboks being number one ranked in the world. We were what, 7th 18 months ago when Rassie took over. What a magnificent journey.
Rugby and championship.
What a wonderful honor to have gone through that journey with them. What an amazing story.
It also reminds me that the standard has been set so high come 2020, and I guess building up to the Lions series as well. What happens now?
What happens to the Lions? They had a plan. They had a plan, and now, they thought, no, we're just going to South Africa, do some safari. All of a sudden, no.
It's serious now.
They're starting to hit that scrum machine already, I'm telling you.
And remember, they're coming here with quite a bit of a grudge now. They've got a lot to prove now. Yeah. They're like, we owe you guys. Because they're hurting as we speak. Their podcasts are not as happy as ours. They're in a darkly lit room.
You don't have any comedians.
There's no comedians. Right, they've got a priest. There's a priest in the The Pope is there. That's not good. It's gloomy.
Oh, geez, it certainly is. But we've got so much to celebrate as South African rugby fans. And listen, we'll continue to do that for the longest time. I think Johan and Virgil were talking about another 4 years. Another 4 years we'll be talking about being champions of the world. So, as we do in each episode, we listen to a snippet from Halftime Chat with Steven Gacy. And this week, he's in conversation with Fokof Polisika founder, François van Cooke.
It took my parents a long time to warm up to this thing. You know, my dad hasn't said the name yet. He calls it Fokof Polisika after 16 years. My mom is kind of into it now, but things kind of changed when I started a solo career, like in 2015 I had it, and I had like this big Afrikaans hit song that kind of crossed over to all kinds of people, and my mom's friends got into this song, and I think that kind of gave them the reason to kind of try and listen to what I had to say, and then they kind of started warming up to it. So it took me like 13 years for my folks to get into my music.
If there's any kids who are listening here who want to be musicians or sportsmen, I think that tells you that it doesn't happen overnight. 13 years. Like,
I don't know if everyone is looking for their parents'
approval,
but yeah, it took me 13 years, I think. But dude, it doesn't happen overnight. And you know, like what I always tell young musicians is practice every day. Practice every day and play with people that you get along with.
Great to hear from Fokof Polisika founder François van Cooke. Thank you very much to Siv Ngesi as well. And be sure to listen to the full length interview on Halftime Chat with Siv to find it. Do search In the Change Room on Iono FM, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or wherever it is that you listen to your favorite podcasts. And fantastic points that he touches on there. And I guess it's what you get when you are trying to follow the dream, follow the passion. And this is where I want to bring you in, Virgil, as well, because I'm sure a lot of those challenges that he faced is what you've gone through in your career.
Yeah, definitely. Especially now in this instance, talking about the parents and how they accept comedy. So obviously, I chose comedy as my passion. I do have a little bit of background in that I went to university. I started a BCom law and management degree, which they paid for. which obviously, as you can imagine, makes it a bit harder for them to accept the fact that now all of a sudden you want to be a comedian. And I graduated. So I do it. Till this day, I'd say between my mom and my dad, my mom mostly, She's hot and cold a lot of the time. So when comedy is going well and I'm really hitting those high points, you know, those pinnacles, then she's the happiest mother on Facebook. Oh, my son, so proud of you, God, and all his blessings shine upon your life. But the moment it's not going that well, it's like, I told you should finish your studies and continue with it. And I'm like, Mom, you can't go up and down and up and down. What's wrong with you? So I guess for me, as long as I'm doing well, she's proud and she accepts it. But the moment like it's not going that well, she'd be like the first person to play, you should consider continuing your studies, which is not that nice, but I mean, it is what it is. My dad, on the other hand, I feel like he is a little bit more like accepting of change as well. Do you know what I'm saying? Because what happens with our parents is I'm speaking about colored people now, but I'm sure black people as well, and I'm sure white people to a certain extent. What happens with our parents is like they fought hard like to get us jobs that they thought were great for us and inspirational for us. So they wanted us to be doctors, they wanted us to be lawyers, they wanted us to be pilots, you know,
engineers.
So of course in their time those were the jobs that were amazing, you know. But in our time, like, we are like, yeah, those jobs are amazing, but we're a little bit of a step ahead now. Now we want freedom in all senses, freedom to follow your passion, you know. And something like comedy, it's a passion. It's something they like, but we didn't fight for comedy, we fought for a lawyer and we fought for a judge, you know what I'm saying? So I think my dad has opened up his mind to the fact that, you know, in this new South Africa of ours, we have opportunities to follow passion. And comedy was not on their plate at the time, but it most certainly is on our plate, or my plate in this time. So he's accepted that. So it's a if part here, there, whatever. But I think as long as I do well, both of them are happy.
Yeah.
If I do badly, one understands and the other one's unhappy.
And the one's on Facebook. So,
the other one's like, what am I going to put on Facebook? No. So yeah,
people read this, mom.
I'm not getting the likes I used to. So yeah, but comedy is my passion. I don't think I'm going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, and I mean, if you were to take that message and relay to a lot of the youngsters who you know want to play rugby, who again have been inspired by this amazing story that we've seen unfold, you know, in front of our eyes over the past month and a half, what would you say? Because I remember, especially when you bring in the parents, and I remember playing rugby in high school and my mom was absolutely against it, and I broke a collarbone and she was just like, okay, that's the last time you are ever going on that field. But again, there's a lot of people who, you know, love this sport, a lot of kids that are inspired by the sport. If you were to take that message and just like, you know, directly send it to them, what would you say?
Yeah, I would say, like, if it's your passion, go for it. Mm. Go for it and be willing to work hard for it. Do you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of guys who become super amazing at something like rugby, for instance, who aren't the star player at school.
Yeah.
You know, at school, they're in the B team, whatever. But if you set your heart on it, you're like, this is what I want to do, you train for it, you go for it, and you can most certainly achieve it. Also, sometimes in life, I feel like after a while, like, destiny starts calling you a little bit. Like, I remember when I got into comedy, at first I didn't want to be a comedian, but people just kept telling me over and over, "You dude, you're so funny, you should be a comedian." I was angry because I was sitting in the same BCom class as them. I was like, "Why you want to kick me out? I'm also studying for the test. You're trying to kick me out." But after a while, it just becomes more and more clear to be like, "I think the world is saying something to me. I've got to follow this." So I'm saying, follow your passion, but also read the signs. Yeah. The signs will be there to be like, "I need to play me some rugby."
We have to talk about, you know, that term that was used a little earlier about destiny and reading the signs and you know, listening as well when destiny comes knocking. And the first thing that came into my mind was someone like Makazole Mabimbi, who, you know, he's since the World Cup win has spoken about the fact that he didn't play SA schools, you know, he didn't you know, get anywhere near playing SA schools. But I remember him at the Kings, and even before that, I just remember him as this blitz finish wing. And what has happened since then has brought him to being, you know, 6 tries at the World Cup, the first South African to score a try in the World Cup final, and everything else that is going to come with that. Another man that we simply have to touch on is Chesden Colby and what he represents, both as a player, but I think most significantly as a small player, and the love-hate relationship we've had with small players in South Africa.
This game is shape and size for each and every player. Doesn't matter where you come from, what size you are, what weight you, or how much you weigh. I'm a firm believer, if you have the right attitude, the right heart, that you can achieve much more. And I can always remember my dad always told me, listen, you're not one of the biggest boys on the field, so you're going to have to put in the extra 1%. And I just kept on doing that since I was in school. And it's definitely helped me as a player, and to get onto the field playing against an opponent that weighs probably 100 or double the weight that I am, it's an opportunity for me to prove people around that it doesn't matter how big or how small you are, there is ways to get around players or tackle players. So
That guy just doesn't, he doesn't have an end. It doesn't matter who he's up against, how big that guy is. He's just going to play as if he's bigger.
Yep.
He really doesn't care about size. And that's an issue because a lot of smaller players don't have that same heart.
Yeah.
And then they get hurt. And then, but Cheslin can do it. You have to do the same work Cheslin did.
Yeah.
So rugby is not a game. Of course, there's place for small players. But there isn't place for 15 small players at the same time on the field. But Cheslin has showed that if your heart's in the right place and that if you want it enough and if you're willing to accept the fact that you're going to have to run around someone and not over him and that you have to go and make another plan to tackle the big player down, if you've made that choice, you can still do it. There's still a place for that. In fact, not only can you make the team, you can become a world champion like him.
And you've put Cheslin in there, you put Faf de Klerk in there, you put Yankees in there. People who do not shirk the responsibility of playing their positions. As small as they are, if a tackle has to be made, they're in there, they make the tackle.
Yes, I've got I prepared a little quote here for you guys. It's a quote by the notorious Conor McGregor. And he went on to say that precision beats power and timing beats speed. Now I want to bring this back to Chess and Kobe, but a quick question for you guys, just quickly, what is your favorite animal and a quick why?
Leopard.
A leopard, why?
They're just so mysterious.
Mysterious.
And they keep to themselves.
Yeah.
Difficult to pick out.
Yeah.
But they just keep to themselves and they're very efficient at what they do.
Cool. Good, sir.
Mine is it's an elephant.
Yeah.
Because they're big, but they're mostly friendly. They don't forget. Unless they go and eat some of the marula fruit that fell down. It's just, big, lovely animals, and normally not a threat, except the young bulls. I associate with that,
For me, my favorite animal is something that goes by the name of the honey badger. In Afrikaans, they call it dirato. It's a tiny little animal, right? And I remember one time the honey badger was fighting against a cobra, and the cobra was super fast. And the commentator, he said, he was like, what the honey badger lacks in speed, because the cobra was super fast, he makes up with ferocity and tenacity.
Yeah.
And I'd like to bring this back to Cheslin Kobe. You might not be the biggest player, but tenacity and ferocity. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, have you seen Cheslin tackle full body? Like, he doesn't just go in with like his entire body is on the biggest man on the field, dragging him down, ferocious and of course tenacious. And I think that's what that comes down to. Size is beaten in that instance with ferocity and tenacity.
Sheesh. Well, so it's last week that you can win a Castle Supporters jersey, and we've got a couple of them to give away. In celebration of the Bucks winning the World Cup, we're giving away 4 shirts, and all you have to tell us is which player did Johan say ranks right at the top amongst the best loose head props in South African rugby. Which player did Johan say is right at the top of the list of loose head props in South African rugby? Send us your answer via WhatsApp on 060-921-6977. And also remember to include your name and surname for T's and C's. Go to this episode's outline on our Iono FM channel or the episode page on supersport.com. Gentlemen, we are right towards
I just saw you. I have to jump in here. I mean, it's been sitting in the back of my mind here, something Prince said earlier about white soccer players and how they shouldn't just be goalkeepers. But now I've got in my mind this image of Ergis Snyman as a goalkeeper. And sorry, we need one more at least, if you don't mind.
And you know, no one's scoring goals.
No one's running at him even.
No one's running. They're scoring own goals now. Let's go the other way. He's doing line-out jumps to save.
Oh, can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? Well, I mean, we've got World Cup qualifiers and AFCON qualifiers. And, you know, if one of our goalkeepers do get injured, listen, there's a man who not only jumps really high, he's got, what, a size, probably size 14 foot. So he'll kick the full leather off that ball if he is needed. But, gentlemen, it is that time of the episode where we have to bring everything to a close. But final comments just about the World Cup and what the past month and a half has been like, and just again, what the future holds for Springbok rugby.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me so much. I am Prince, of course, the comedian. I would say absolutely lovely World Cup. Shout out to Japan and the Japanese people for hosting what I feel has probably been the best World Cup I've ever watched so far.
Definitely.
Mm. Right? It's been the best. And obviously for the Springboks, I mean, what a turnaround in that tournament to come back and win it. My other favorite games was, of course, England versus New Zealand was an absolute cracker to watch. All the Japanese games when they took out Ireland, took out Scotland, it was a pleasure to watch. England versus Australia as well. England kicked them out the tournament as well. What a pleasure to watch. Feel a little bit sad about Argentina. I feel like they wasted a little bit in this tournament. Could have done better. Could have beaten France. The red card against England also threw him off a bit. But a tournament that I enjoyed to the fullest, and I'm so happy that as South Africans we saw it out to the bitter end.
Yeah.
And we left the tournament the happiest of all the happy people that were there.
From my side, just to everyone listening to this show, all Springbok fans the world over listening to this, just enjoy this moment, man. It comes around, you know, in my lifetime, this is the third time it's happened. It doesn't come around every day. Enjoy it and be as happy about this. We're going into December now, not a lot of rugby also. Let's call it, it's December already. Yeah. Let's go into these holidays happy, won't we?
More than enough reason to have an extra two drinks or three. But please don't drink and drive. That's one thing that we have to add on to that. But gentlemen, thank you very much. It has been an absolute pleasure. And again, if you didn't know by now, the Springboks are Rugby World Cup champions.
Yay!